Welcome to Bread Time.
My name is Gabriel Valdivia.
And this is Charlie Dietz.
And today we are taking one of the topics that has been requested in our Slack VIP channel. And we're going to be talking about workflows and how do we design and what are some tips on how to design better.
Let's do it.
Maybe let's just set the ground floor. We are both designers. We work on product design, right? But interestingly enough, we are in slightly different fields. Usually, we've designed products for the web, mobile, both Android and iOS. And recently, I've been introduced to VR. So that's been kind of affecting my workflow as well.
And I've been introduced to Windows Phone.
Okay, so Charlie.
Yes, sir.
How have you perfected your workflow in the last, say, 8 years of designing for mobile and web? What are some of the tricks that you use to be more effective on your job?
I think everything is in constant flux, and getting used to that is the biggest thing that is helpful. I think a lot of people look for like absolutes and pro tips as to how to make themselves faster. But I think really the key to being faster is just doing stuff over and over again. And then you pick up your own little tricks here and there, and they build up over the course of time.
How have you gotten better? What has changed in your personal workflow? Or maybe what is your workflow? How do you, let's say there's a new design problem, where do you start?
I think like when I start a new problem, there's a large period of understanding before I touch any tools. So I'm thinking about like what the problem is for the people who are going to be using the product, the problems around the product. I think about like what other products solve the problem, what interfaces exist already that like are clear, like what they do good, what they do bad. I think it's just like a long process of research, which is similar to like developers, right? Like developers, when they have something they have to code, the first thing they do is like figure out how they're going to do it, right? They spend a bunch of time like learning about what APIs they're going to use, like how it should be written, how it should be structured. I think it's the same thing for design. Like you just don't jump in and start doing something. You got to like understand what you're about to do first.
But specifically, how do you get that understanding? How do you do that research?
It just depends on how formal it is. Like if it's for me and I'm just working on something small, I might just like look online and read about stuff or whatever. Like if it is for a corporation that I happen to work for, I like will have someone who specializes in research start to decide how the problems can be understood better. What a shitty answer.
I mean, all right. So I'm just trying to get to the specifics here. So when you say look online, you open your browser window and then you do what?
I got to think of a problem. Like, what am I trying to solve?
Let's say we want to design a like a maps app. We want to make a map or like a mapping, or what's that called? Like a routing app or something.
Okay, we're going to make a routing app. Like it's like how to get from point A to B, right?
Yeah.
So like it's just me and I'm going to like figure this out. So the first thing I do is I go see like what's the most popular apps that are doing this already. So like there's native apps to OSs like Apple Maps, Google Maps. There's a large market of other apps out there that are trying to pull their own take onto it. And like, I'm sure they've learned a bunch of lessons. So I'm just going to download them all and play with them and start to see like what's happening with them. How would you do it?
Yeah, I think that's I would probably start by browsing the App Store. If I'm making a mobile app, I would start with browsing the App Store and see how people describe their apps. How they sell their apps, what the selling points are for their apps, and how the app that I would hypothetically be working for is different than that. Once I understand what our competitive advantage is, then I would go on somewhere like Dribbble or even just like a Google image search to get some inspiration on some patterns, right? So, I mean, a map app is pretty familiar, but if it's something a little bit more bespoke, I would just look for it on Dribbble, and probably there's another designer that's done it before, and they have their own take on a certain you know, surface or screen or something like that, and that will give me an understanding of the kind of landscape and the patterns that are established within that industry.
I think something that's cool about this is both of us are not too cool to go see what other people have done. I think there was a period of my career where it's like I didn't want to rely on what other people had done. I wanted to like just come up with it myself, and that's like where I would start. But I realized over the course of time that that isn't useful. Like, you have to understand what's already occurred because there's learnings in all of it, and it's not going to like stifle your creativity. It's like just part of the process of understanding the problem.
Now, when we're done with the research phase and you actually start implementing something, you know, there's the traditional design way of doing it where you go from like a whiteboard or a sketchbook, you know, real, you know, low fidelity sketching, and then jump directly into sketch for high fidelity mocks afterwards. I have recently, I use sketchbooks to just unload whatever I'm thinking, but with no intention of showing a layout or even a UX flow. I just try different, really kind of high level designs in my sketchbook or whatever piece of paper. And then I use Sketch to sketch this, the software to create these UX flows in really basic wireframes. And I have a few pro tips on how to use Sketch to do that. For example, you can set it to store profile pictures as default patterns. So you can really easily access your profile pictures that way. And there's just different keyboard shortcuts that you can use in Sketch to be really fast and really bypass the wireframing stage by hand.
Conversely, I just never basically ever wireframe, and it's not because I don't want to. It sounds like a great idea, but I actually get so much more inspired by just like getting straight into Sketch and like slamming stuff around. Like, it's probably slower. I have like a moment where I'm like pursuing some sort of idea and then I backtrack and go some other way. But for me, it's like once I'm in Sketch or like on the computer, that's when I actually start to get creative. Like, I just can't stare at a notebook and start writing stuff out, more than likely.
Yeah, well, for me, I just can't really, I can't translate what my head is thinking into a design unless it is in some sort of like simpler form somewhere else. And it's usually scribbles that only I can understand, but they really help inform the kind of high fidelity stage of the process. So, okay, so if you sketch for mocks, right, and you can jump straight from research into mocks, I'm curious how you use Sketch, because I've recently, you know, not recently, but in the past few years, prototyping has been a really big thing, and oftentimes I go from this really raw scribbles in my sketchbook directly into something like Origami to create the flow there, and make something that is interactive and really just bypass the sketch part. And that has forced me to have to use Sketch kind of like a dumping ground for assets. So I need like, you know, a profile picture, I need something that's some sort of layout really quick, I make it in Sketch and then I import it very quickly into Origami. Which means that Sketch is something that is kind of disposable, right? It's just kind of like a repository of things that I need for my main document, which is in Origami. And I'm curious how you do it, because you've been really bullish on adaptive design lately. And adaptive design, especially in the context of a tool like Sketch, I find it really time consuming. And I'm not sure how you justify using adaptive design on Sketch.
I think like a lot of the surfaces I've been working on for quite a while now are part of a larger set of surfaces. So I generally know, like, if I'm supposed to like start thinking about a feature, I have like kind of some parameters I'm working within. Like, I know what app I'm working in. I know what already exists in the app. So I build all of those components as adaptive components because they're probably going to come into play in some way or another. And I like having them as just a toolkit to like start slamming around and doing different stuff. And like my sketch files, like I have two sketch files for every project. One is called like project name. Actually, three. One is called just project name. The second one is called project name underscore alternatives. And when I start the project, I just like take about like, I just start spreading out artboards all over like the sketch file and just start like doing tons of variations on whatever I'm thinking about. And I just keep mutating it. And then I take kind of like maybe whatever the best five examples of it are, and I move those to the file that's like called project name. And then over the course of, you know, iteration and dealing all with all the things that'll go on in a project, eventually when I get done with that one, I'll just duplicate that one to another file with just the core views and the core experience and do like underscore spec. And then I'll start to make that one like totally precise. And that'll be like the final version of whatever I'm doing. But
yeah. Interesting. So you use different documents. I do something similar, but I use one sketch file with many different, pages. Right. Yeah. So I start with one instead of alternatives. I call it explorations. And it's the same thing. Although I don't really use artboards. I find artboards, the masking behavior on artboard, really hard to iterate quickly on. So I just use rectangles on the emptiness that is the sketch canvas. And
I also was using the rectangles for a while, but I switched back to artboards. Tell me what you like about the rectangles.
Well, what's great about the rectangles is that they are not masks by default, really. So I have kind of, I don't know, it makes me faster to just define a canvas and drop stuff in that canvas and move it around in a way that is more fluid. Although once I am further along the process and I do land on something that is fairly final, I'm closer to the spec stage, I do make artboards at that point. And that helps me kind of just be more anal about the way I organize the layers. And that's where I really name all the layers and I make sure everything's pixel perfect and I create symbols and I export all the assets from there. But what I was referring to earlier is that exploration stage, a lot of the time is not taking place in Sketch, or Sketch is not the primary surface. Sketch is just where I create a few elements that I use and then I import them into Origami to iterate on.
Yeah, I think like conversely, I use the artboards through the whole exploration stage because they're just easy to duplicate. I know the parameters of the artboard. I don't know. It's just like, it feels really good. I can export them out. I can export like a batch of them out really quick. It's like super easy to do. But then when I actually, if I'm prototyping in Framer, I have to get rid of the artboard. So I make another document, which is like the Framer prototype. And for that one, I don't use the artboards because the way I work in Framer is the artboards would they would mask off like scroll views and stuff like that. So I work without artboards for my Framer prototype.
So at this point you have like four different documents that you have to keep up to date.
No, I only like, I'm working towards the spec one. That's like a finale. And I'm working towards like probably the prototype one. Like the other, like the spec one usually like I said it wrong. Like basically the spec one is like the final one. And that's like the one I use. And then there's like an alternatives one, which is like a bunch of trash that I gave up on, but I want to keep around just in case. I should just use a page for it. That would make more sense. I could probably get it down to two documents.
Now, I've used Framer for like a hot second, and the way you use it is like you create a sketch document that is organized in a certain way, and then you import that document onto Framer, right? And that is, although I think Origami technically supports that workflow, the one I use is very different than that, which is I just start with a empty Origami project always, and add stuff from there. So I need a nav bar, I just drag the nav bar and I create one within Origami and so on. So Sketch is never really a starting point for the prototype. It's just a place where I pick up elements and drop them into the prototype. How's that different than Framer?
So I'm like a mega Framer fanboy where I just love working that way where I like create a sketch file, and then I manipulate the elements of the sketch file. And then as I develop the prototype, I end up going back to that sketch file and making the alterations there, but then just re-importing into the Framer document. So for whatever reason, going back and forth between those keeps me sane, because I know where everything is in the Framer file, and I know re-importing it is going to be, I mean, I know where everything is in the sketch file, and I know re-importing it is going to be A-OK. So I don't feel like I'm ever losing progress. I feel like I'm just like gaining. But I find that super useful for really like complex, long prototypes. Just this week, I did a small, like single sort of action prototype. And I started it in Framer, and I was like, this is just going to take forever. Like, it seemed like totally overwhelming. And I contacted you, and I was like, hey, I'm going to try origami for this one. And I did exactly what you said. Like, I just had a couple elements that I needed, and I just like exported them out of Sketch and just dropped them into origami. And it was like super duper fast for like what I was trying to do.
So fast, dude.
I think I would get lost in like a big prototype if I was constantly trying to manage like assets, like, oh, where did I put that button now? Like, I feel like that type of thing would get more complex the more complex the prototype got, and that's what I'm scared of with origami and why I generally like rely on Framer for the complex ones.
Yeah, I think in general origami really helps you deal with and manage the ambiguity and the mess of life itself. And through an origami prototype, you can really learn to adapt in a way that is really malleable and organic to the problems that surround you.
But have you ever been like deep in an origami prototype and you're like, oh, I want to change this one thing now. And you're like, oh God, I have to like recreate it because I don't know where it went. Has that happened to you, or is that just me?
It's happened before for sure, although it's getting much better. You can now search for different patches, and if you name your patches just like you name your layers, you know, you can find them fairly easily. And part of the joy of origami is similar to the joy of coding, where like you can grab those patches, which are visual elements, and organize them in a way that they make sense to you. So like the actual visual arrangement of the patches is part of the process and part of the design decisions that you make. So I find that fairly interesting and engaging, but it is like night and day compared to like the structure of a text document. For VR, this changes a lot, right? So a lot of the assumptions that we have for mobile are gone in VR. So at the very least, you can assume in mobile or web that you are interacting with a screen, whether it's a screen in your hand or a screen on your desk, and you understand the dimensions of that screen to a certain degree. In VR, that whole assumption is gone. So distance and scale of objects is really hard to guess and to like rely on existing patterns. So with new projects, you're often kind of like redefining that, like, how far is this from you? How big is it? How big is the text? Is it readable? Can you grab it? All these questions are things that we need to ask ourselves in VR. So they affect the workflow in a way that basically prototyping becomes a bigger and bigger part of what we do. So we go from scribbling something on a sketchbook or a whiteboard or whatever, almost immediately to something like Unity, where we create a functioning prototype where we define, you know, like how far things are from you, how big they are. Are they floating in space? All these questions, right? Once you have an established language or established kind of like, you know, paradigm in your app, then we often use something like Sketch to create like a concept art. Right, so just like a way for you to fill in the gaps and kind of understand how this sits within the world. So the role of a designer at some point in VR kind of shifts, if not momentarily, to be more of a concept artist, someone that just sells an idea of how this is supposed to feel or supposed to interact with, and then you translate that concept to a prototype. And depending how complex that prototype is, it can be done by you as a designer or by an engineer or a actual prototyper within VR.
I think you hit on something there too, which struck me, which is I think the more people who are involved in a project, the more you want to like structure your process. Earlier on when we were saying you want to do research and you want to like whatever before you start even designing stuff like that, I think it all depends on how many people are involved. Like if it's just me, like I just started doing the Moon app for Android, what I did was like I didn't design it. I just like kind of like jumped into Android and started learning the development and just like started plugging away, because the only person who loses if I'm like not efficient is me. I'm going to take all the hit. So I'm not going to like complain at myself probably too much. But if you are working with other people, you like want to be prepared for every step along the way. In VR, there's like some differences, right? But like if you weren't prepared for like jumping into the code, it would throw people for a loop. But you kind of accept that in that group because like, oh, you know, it's going to be kind of crazy and you're going to have to figure it out because you're dealing with like new concepts. But when you're doing like UI design and it's like, I need to add a form, you probably want to have it totally worked out what you're going to do before you like have a design, because it'll just cause churn later on if you haven't done your job ahead of time. Like it's more figured out along the way. So
cool. Yeah, well, there you have it. That is how two guys that are not an authority at all, how they design. And that's our workflow. What is your workflow? Let us know. We have a website, which is bretttime.fm. We have a Twitter account, bretttime.fm. And we have a Slack channel that you can, or what is it? A Slack team?
I think just like email us, DM your email address to us and we'll add you.
Cool. That's been Bread Time. My name is Gabriel Valdivia.
And this is Charlie Dietz.
Peace.